6 minutes after 1 o'clock. Monday, 7th day of April. Already. Well, we're up and I watched yesterday's ball game, by the way. What a drag. What are we now? 1-5? Jeez. From the top of the mountain, tumbling all the way to the end, the last shall become first, etc., etc. So anyway, oh well, it's a long season. Let's see, 160 games, and that doesn't include the championships. We're good. They'll get it together, you know. Never say die and all that jazz. On Monday morning, and it's the third Monday, Tim Hopp. Well, the first Monday, Tim Hopp will be showing up at the first Monday of the month with our car guy. So, I'll be coming up in 2 hours. Get yourself all ready with all your automotive. You know, it's not the Magliazzi's, but what are you going to do, huh? You know, instead of click and clack, it's this clack. We can call it Rick and Clack. Oh, we get sued. I mean, yeah, we'd be hearing from the Magliazzi's in a heartbeat. It's Rick and Clack, the not quite so tepid brothers, anyway. Tim, of course, will be showing up at 3 o'clock here in the studio live. By the way, we have another person live. This is a big night for live in the studio tonight. We have a Rebbe, Rabbi Jamie Korngold. You may have heard about this lady. You can say, lady? A rabbi? Yeah. We'll tell you all about this in a moment. She's written a book called God in the Wilderness, Rediscovering the Spirituality of the Great Outdoors. I always thought if you wanted to find God, go there. You know, buildings are, well, they're buildings. And not exactly much spiritual, even if it is I.M. Pei doing the architecture. No. So anyway, Rabbi Jamie Korngold, God in the Wilderness, momentarily. First off, all right, all you airy folk out there, you Aryans, symbolized by the ram, ruled by the planet Mars, ought to be headstrong, assertive, athletic, and drawn to risk and good at motivating others. There's another way of saying is, you know, just beating you senseless. Born in the state in 1915, autobiography entitled Lady Sings the Blues. Billie Holiday was born in the state in 1915. The book was, by the way, published in 1956. About 10 years later, the movie was made. Diana Ross played. She played Billie Holiday. Tony Dorsett, great football player, born in the state in 1954. Ravi Shankar, oh yes, the Ravi Shankar, sitarist and composer. I saw him live. When he was on the road with Billy Preston and George Harrison. This is 1,000 years ago. Born in the state in 1920. William Wordsworth, the poet, was born in the state in 1770. Francis Ford Coppola, great film director, born in the state in 1939. And St. Francis Xavier, Jesuit missionary, the head of the Jesuit order, was born in the state in 1506. And if you've ever gone to a Jesuit school, you got a great education. I did. Of course, the nuns were brutal. They carried rulers with metal tips. Explains an awful lot. Anyway, and on this date in 1949, Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical play, South Pacific, Bali High. Remember them? It's a great movie. It really is a great movie. Bali High, or South Pacific, opened up on Broadway and won the Pulitzer the following year. One of the first few that actually won Pulitzer. Well, we have live in the studio a very interesting lady, and who, by the way, lives in Boulder. And if I were to meet you anywhere in a mountain, the last thing I would have thought of you is being a Rebbe. But you are. Jamie Korngold, Reformed Jewish Rabbi, started the Adventure Rabbi Program back in 2001, and is now known all over the country for her work pioneering and integrating spirituality with the outdoors. First of all, how did you get to be a Rebbe?
Well, I went to rabbinic school. I went to graduate school at Hebrew Union College.
But why? I mean, I'm curious. What made you do that?
Well, it's a good question. I was a ski bum for 7 years.
That recommends it right there, yeah.
I was skiing up in Vail, Colorado. And in Vail, we didn't have a full-time rabbi.
Oh.
And so we would take turns leading services.
You're going to hang yourself there
I am. We would take turns leading services, and I just happened to be the person that knew a little bit more than the rest of the congregation about leading a Jewish service, and so I was leading the services. And before you know it, the congregation said to me, Jamie, would you think about going to rabbinical school to become a rabbi?
Huh?
So off I went to rabbinical school. And little did I know that I was going to be able to, through becoming a rabbi, use my twin passions of Judaism and the outdoors and put them right together.
Now, this is not normally something that is thought about as being necessary. Yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go. All right. She almost hanged herself on the microphone or on the headphones.
I was actually going to climb up it.
Well, you're about to. First time we've ever had a near fatality because of headphones. But you grew up in Westchester, New York, right? Is that right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right outside the big city.
Yeah, right outside the city, yeah. Now, did you ever go down into the city a lot?
All the time.
Okay.
Yeah, we take the train into the Manhattan.
All right.
Yeah. See the shows. I was a little after South Pacific opened, but, you know.
Okay. Did you ever go see Leonard Bernstein when he was... Or you're not old enough for that.
I was like Chorus Line.
Okay.
That was like when I was a kid.
Okay, all right. Yeah, when I went to school, we used to, on Fridays, Leonard Bernstein would have the, you know, a Friday all day with the kids. And so kids from all over the city would on Fridays. And once a month, we'd go down to Carnegie Hall and watch Leonard Bernstein and whatever he was doing.
Whatever he was doing
whatever,
is good.
Oh, it was always great, yeah.
Absolutely.
We even saw, West Side Story before it became West Side Story in the movies.
Wow.
You know, so, and he was actually working on it, you know, so he was, the scores. We didn't get to see the actual show until much later, but, so it was great fun. But, you know, you grew up in the kind of the suburban reality.
I did. You know, I grew up in Edgemont was my high school, and it's a very affluent neighborhood.
Yeah, it is.
And I'll tell you, even as I was growing up, I was really into the outdoors. I would, every summer, I rode my bike across the country when I was 16 years old.
I was going to say you went to the Catskills and stayed in a hotel.
I did, but then I got on my bike and rode all the way out to San Francisco to get away from it, I guess.
Yeah,
but I
right,
went camping, and I always loved the outdoors because I always felt that when I was at home, in my home neighborhood, I was judged by my clothes and what I wore and how much money my parents had or didn't have.
That's Westchester County.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the mountains or just outdoors in nature, people judged me for who I really am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you got the how well you can cope, you know. I've done a lot of camping, and I can always tell a lot about somebody about how they handle themselves outside in the wilderness.
Because you have to take care of yourself. No,
yeah, and there's no whining. You know,
there's no crying
in baseball. There's no whining in camping. So, you know, this, you know, I think that's too hard. Well, anyway, anybody who can do well in the wilderness, I got to the point, when I was in school, we used to, I was in my third and fourth year in anthropology. So we used to take out the newbies. You know, when we'd go out and do a dig, we were working Chaco Canyon for a while. And,
oh, beautiful.
You know, so I got to the point where, you know, when I'd set up, you know, because I had to watch all these, you know, kids. Quiet. You know, we'd set up these big sites, you know, and, you know, of course, and I got to the point where when I went camping, I went English, you know, big tents. And, you know, we had, you know, the gas stoves and, we, honest to God, had a kitchen sink. Coleman made a portable kitchen sink. Have you ever seen these things?
I have seen it, actually. They sell it at McGuckin.
Yeah, right. people say, you got everything but the kitchen sink. I said, no, I have the kitchen sink. So, yeah, I mean, when you get out in the wilderness, you know, and you can appreciate anybody who knows how to do it. You know, and then if you're backpacking, you know, and you say, how well do you do this? And I just want to see, you know, how you, you know, what do you carry? You know, what kind of bag do you have? You know, kind of a... You know, do you have a mat? You know, did you have one that actually, as you threw it out, it automatically inflated with about an inch of air?
You know,
have you seen those?
I have. And you really would appreciate this event I have coming up because the Passover Seder is coming up.
Cool.
Right? And I have about 200 people coming down to Moab with me.
Oh, I love Moab.
And it's catered.
Oh.
We have a caterer coming to cater an event with no electricity and no water.
Where are you going to be camped?
We're on BLM land. We've reserved a
East of town.
Just, 15 miles outside of town, there on the river.
Right along the river. It's pretty there.
So where all these people are going to be sitting home in their scratchy clothes, all dressed up at their little satyrs. We're going to be out underneath this huge
cottonwoods.
Yeah, and this big rock arch. We're going to hike up a mile and a half to this big arch and have our seder underneath this arch there. And I think it's going to be pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, that's, and of course, you got Arches National, which is, I guess, if you're looking at the river, it'd be north and the west side of the river.
Yeah, right down there.
And if you on Moab's, if you go where the bridge goes over the river, and there's a little highway that goes along the river,
where the spring is.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you hang a right, and you go up the road. Oh, I've been down that road a lot, not a lot.
Well, me and my best 199.
Did you go through? Do you ever go through Cisco?
Haven't been to Cisco.
Oh, you got to go through Cisco. There's a great old iron bridge there.
Okay.
The reason why you have to go there is because they have these 1930, it was built in the 1930s during the Depression years, you know, and the CCC built it, you know, and it's this wonderful old iron bridge. They don't use it anymore. They put another bridge. But when I had my Jeep, we'd, you know, go on this bridge. But the best part about it is you whack one of the steel cables and it rings in the canyon.
Oh, wow.
So you whang.
Make some music.
So anyways, if you got a chance, go through Cisco. Come in through. You know, you can always hit the backside.
Down
the backside. And there's a couple of signs there where they have cattle. And some artist, and I don't know, some whacked out artist, put helicopter blades on top of the cows where it's this cow crossing. So you've got airborne cows now in Cisco. So you started doing this up in Vail, and you had the congregation. Now, is there a synagogue in Vail now?
There is, but I'm not. That's not what I'm doing anymore.
You just do that outside.
That's how I got to rabbinical school. That's how I became a rabbi.
So now you just do
it
outside.
In 2001, I started the Adventure Rabbi Program, which is based out of Boulder. And we have four major retreats each year, including our Rosh Hashanah retreat and our Passover retreat. And then we do a ski retreat and a summer retreat. And then in between that, we have Sabbath programs where we take people once a month. We take people hiking on the Mesa Trail up by Boulder, or we lead ski services at Copper Ski Resort. And so that's how our community gets along. We're a synagogue without walls. We don't have a building. We don't have a building fund.
And
we do all our experiences outside.
That makes more sense. The children of Israel, you know, when they left Egypt, you know, I mean, there wasn't, you know, wasn't even a good tent. You know, I mean, we're out in the desert now, so you do it outside.
Well, that's the theory of my book. My premise is that religion, Christianity, and Judaism got their start in the wilderness for a reason. And I think there's certain spiritual truths that we get the best when we're outdoors. And that when religion moved inside, we lost track of some of these really important spiritual lessons.
Yeah, like the sky.
The sky is a good one.
Yeah, it's a good beginning. Yeah. We've got a lot of things, in fact, in religion. 19 minutes after 1 o'clock, Rabbi Jamie Korngold is with us, God in the Wilderness. When we come back, we'll talk about this touch with spirituality and outdoors. 303-713-8585, the number. It's 19 minutes now after 1 o'clock. I'm Rick Barber. You're listening to News Radio 850 KOA.
How can they ignore their friends? Easy to be proud. Easy to say no. How can people be so heartless? How can people be so cruel? Easy to be hard.
Four minutes after 1 o'clock. Three Dog Night doing it tonight. Great song, by the way. It was in Hair. One of those songs in Hair. You see here?
I did.
Live on stage, I mean.
Oh, sorry. Movie, multiple times.
Yeah, you should see it on stage. It's way cool. Got naked. 42 degrees going on out there right now. And later on today, it's going to be rain, mostly rain down here. A little rain and snow in the hills, probably up in Boulder. A little bit of slushy, but nothing's going to stick. I mean, it's April snow. But 45, 47 degrees somewhere in those parts down here. And the overnight low tonight is going to get, well, it's 42 right now. I'm pretty convinced it's not going to get anywhere near 33. It's predicted to. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. They say, well, it will. No, it won't. Anyway, back again with my guest, Rabbi Jamie Korngold, God in the Wilderness. Now, do you do Sabbath every week?
Personally, I do Sabbath every week. Well, I think Sabbath is one of the best things on the planet. I think having a day off every single week is something that everyone should do.
Yeah, now, I always thought, because I grew up in New York, so half my friends were Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other half are Irish Catholics, which was really kind of stupid. But nevertheless, I thought it was way cool because my friends who went, that I knew, and after I went to Catholic school, I went to a public school for a while, you know, a PS, you know how that goes. And they got the Jewish holidays off. And then, you know, the Catholic kids, you know, they got the Christian holidays. And I said, why can't we have them both? You know, I just want to have them all. You know, you just want to have time off. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, why not? But so when you take Sabbath from Friday to Saturday, right?
That's right.
Okay, sundown to sundown.
That's right.
And then Sunday's off anyway.
Right, bonus day.
Way big time. Yeah, well, see, I happen to agree with that. You know, people say, well, you don't work on Friday. I said, no, I don't. I'm Jewish. They think, what? You're not Jewish, you're Catholic. Yeah, and my father's a Mormon, go figure. But so you'd actually, but you don't have a service up in Boulder.
Well, see, I'm the adventure rabbi.
Yeah, I know, right? But you go out in the world, because come back packing with me.
So I have the double bonus day off. So when I spend my day celebrating Sabbath with my community, what that means is we go climb a 14er, we go skiing.
Now, is that kosher?
Here's my deal. I'm a Reformed Jew.
Yeah.
Right? So Reformed Jews, we don't believe the Bible literally. We don't think that God, like, you know, was given dictation to Moses on top of Sinai and Moses jotted everything down and that tells us exactly what we do. What we believe as Reformed Jews is you have to look at the commandments and what's the intention behind it. So the intention behind the Sabbath, to me, is to have a day. Make it holy. Make it different. Take a day to connect with your community, with yourself, with God. You know, so for some people, the way they do that is they don't drive a car, they don't light a fire, that stuff.
Yeah.
They go to the temple. For me, the way I do it, the way my community does it, is we take a day off from our work, from our regular week, and we go out and we immerse ourselves in nature. And if that means getting a little sweaty climbing a peak, I say that's okay.
Well, that's right. I keep thinking, you know, that probably, you know, most of the, you know, the tribe of Israel, when they're in the wilderness, I'm pretty sure they were walking around a lot, you know. And, you know, you're out there in the desert, you know, you got the sheep. They don't know what day it is, you know. And they, you know, so somebody's got to look at the sheep. Well, we got to keep the Sabbath day holy. Well, I got sheep, you know, and that's holy enough. Thank you very much. You know, you go up on a holy mountain. I mean, going up and down, you know, this log-giving thing was pretty strenuous. You know, how many times can your clown climb the holy mountain?
Well, I'll say, you know, one of the big differences between religion today and religion then certainly is that when they wanted to meet God, they didn't go sit in a church. They didn't go sit in a synagogue. They climbed peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, we think God is everywhere. But in the biblical days, they thought God dwelled in certain places at certain times.
Usually mountains.
And most of the times, yeah. I mean, if you climb a mountain, you're closer to God. They thought, and the other places they thought were holy were by rivers and by trees.
Yeah.
And I think they might have been onto something.
Well, I think so, too. The Irish ancestors always thought trees are cool. But, you know, you heard the old joke, but I'm a Reformed Druid. We can worship at bushes now.
Oh, that's great.
You know, it was really a stupid joke then. It was a MASH joke. I didn't make it up. You know, Hawkeye did that one. But I happen to agree with that. But do you have do you come up against other Jews who look at you and say, what are you, nothing? And what are you doing being a rabbi anyway? Do you catch flack?
You know, I tell you, I happen to live in Boulder.
Well, yeah, but when you're not in Boulder, I mean, outside the confines of Boulder, my God, it's another world.
I have to tell you.
Go down to the spring, see what happens.
I'll tell you, a lot of the Orthodox and a lot of the more fundamental rabbis disagree with what I'm doing, but really like what I'm doing, and I'll tell you why. The reason they like it is because I bring in thousands of people. I have a website, that adventurerabbi.org, that gets thousands and thousands of hits every single day of people looking to connect with Judaism. And they, you know, Judaism has been inaccessible, it's been irrelevant, and they finally find me, and they're like, oh, this is a rabbi I can relate to. So what my Orthodox colleagues figure is that, all right, you know, then the adventure rabbi will get them in the door, and then we'll fix them.
make them better.
You know? Now,
yeah,
they don't tell me this. They tell my husband.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, right. You know, and then he, you know, you're not going to leave with anything. So generally speaking, though, they look at it not so badly. Because I do know some Orthodox. And, I mean, you know, they're, especially when you're in places like New York. You know, if you go to New York, you know, I mean, some of the Orthodox rabbis are, you know, that we're phylacteries. I mean, they're, you know, we got the side locks, the whole thing, you know, the Hasidic and all, you know, right down the line. And the thought of anything other than that would, you know, be shocking.
You know, here's the thing. 70% of the Jews in America are not affiliated with the congregation at any one time. It doesn't mean that they were never or they won't ever be, but right now, today, 70% of the Jews in America are not affiliated with congregations, which means 30% of the Jews are being served by congregational rabbis. I think those rabbis are doing a great job serving those 30%, so I'm not worried about them. I'm taking care of the other 70%.
We don't know yet. I don't know where my synagogue is, and I'm not worried about it. Yeah, yeah. That well, Denver has a pretty active and has had for a very long time a very active Jewish community.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and has had, well, since the middle of the 19th century, at least.
My husband, his family, his great grandfather built the first mikveh here in the late 1800s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Denver, there's temples on the west side of town. In fact, there's one on the campus at Auraria. Have you ever seen it? It's now an art gallery.
Old places, old synagogues.
Yeah, the old synagogue's been around a long, long time. There's a couple of old temples, one over by East High. I don't know if you've ever seen it. In what is, I guess, North Capitol Hill, or, you know, the South City Park neighborhood, or the East High School neighborhood, if you've been over there. Big old, beautiful old temple. I don't even know what they do with it now.
My teachings go back further than that. I'm going back, way back to that ancient wisdom of the wilderness.
Yeah, well, you're talking right after Abram left Samaria, or, you know, the Ur of the Chaldees. Is that how it went? Actually, they weren't Chaldeans, but I think they were Akkadians, but that's another story.
I think they were doing pretty good until Moses came down off the mountain, and then God said, build me a temple so I may dwell among you.
Well, no,
then it was downhill.
After this building thing, you know, this, well, you know, I mean, Moses is living, you know, we grew up around the Egyptians. What did he know? You know, they were building everything anyway. You know, they go around, we're building temples. That's what we do. We're Egyptians. But, you know, when they were in the wilderness, they had a tent, a tabernacle, which, by the way, I think is fascinating. You know, they talk about tabernacles. I think if we, you know, broke the words down, we'd find out what, first of all, they're probably a Greek word. And more likely than not, has absolutely nothing to do with what we think. There's one in Salt Lake, by the way.
That's a tabernacle.
That's a tabernacle. Well, you know, God only knows. You know, it looks like actually a dome stadium, come to think of it. You know, I expect a rock concert there, personally. I'd love to see that organ rock out. Have you ever seen that one?
Oh, I'm not allowed in. I haven't.
No,
been inside.
Well, that's
what
right.
Do I know?
You know, they'd probably beat me stupid if I got on the grounds, come to think of it. But they have an organ, you know, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Yes, I've seen it on television.
Okay, and you've seen that
big,
beautiful organ.
Yes.
I'd like to see, you know, someone like Billy Preston on it, personally. You know, just wail away on it.
I think they take recommendations. I think there's a box outside the tabernacle you could put your comment in.
Yeah, just before they'd come and take you away and never be seen again and probably sent to Brigham Young and, you know.
I can't advise you on this one.
I know.
You're out of my league.
I spent 2 years at Brigham Young until they threw me out of there. That was a whole other reality. But so here's Moses. He's got, you know, Aaron, his brother, and he's got Joshua, and there they are, and they're below the holy mountain. And whether it's Sinai or Jebel Musa, there's three or four locations. I watched the History Channel, and they think they may have found something, but it has nothing to do with Sinai. It's in the Sinai. It just has nothing to do with the one they think it is. And here they are. They're living in the wilderness. A whole, two generations, 40 years, two generations. One passes away, and the new generation gets old, and they got kids now. And they've been camped out. They got the sheep, and they're buying swords from some town nearby, getting ready to wipe out the Canaanites, which they did, which has a whole historical curiosity all by itself. But they were out. They were in the wilderness. People say in the wilderness. Some people say, well, what does that mean? Well, and I suppose you came to terms with the notion of the children of Israel evolving, becoming Jews, outdoors. They were in the wilderness.
That's right.
And I mean, that's what the Bible says, in the wilderness. And I don't know what the Hebrew translation is, but
the Midbar.
The Midbar, yeah. Which is...
In the wilderness.
Close enough for jazz. For those in the wild, out there, in the outdoor. Well, anybody who didn't live in a town, which were usually walled when you were in the land of Canaan, and they were usually on hilltops. And by the way, they used to call them kings. We're actually probably mayors, more likely than not. The king of this, the king of that. But if you came out of Egypt, the Egyptians were, pretty sophisticated folk, big cities, and had just about the best of everything, more or less. I mean, if you're an Egyptian,
they had cucumbers.
Well, that would do it. Got a pickle. kind of says a lot right there. So they're out camped, and they've got goat hair tents. Now, when you were evolving this notion, obviously you were long out in the wilderness before you decided to become a Rebbe, but somewhere along the line where the nexus of the two yous came together, the outdoor, I like it outdoors you, and then suddenly this notion of being Jewish and becoming a rabbi, this notion of the children of Israel being in the wilderness is how they began, really, as an identity. Did that somehow influence you at all? Or that just happened that way, and here you are, and there they were, and the fact that it's out in the wilderness didn't influence you that much?
I think it does. I think it permeates every part of Judaism. I think that we just tend to think of it more as a metaphor. And I think that's part of what I'm trying to teach is that it's not a metaphor. So, for example, in Psalm 23, right? Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Right? Make me lay down for green pastures, etc. Yeah.
You got it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this is an amazing psalm, and it's given comfort to people through generations. And in fact, when I'm doing a funeral, and if I don't do Psalm 23, someone comes up to me afterwards and they say, Rabbi, where was Psalm 23? I was waiting for it. But what does this psalm really say? It doesn't say, when your life is miserable, read the Bible. It's not what it says. It doesn't say, when you need comfort and consolation, go talk to your minister or your rabbi. It's not what it says. It says, the Lord leads me to green pastures and beside still waters. We read that inside our pews, sanctuaries, and we think that's a metaphor. But I don't think it is. I think what it really means is go outside. Go outside, and when you are surrounded by the majesty of creation, you will feel connected to that which is bigger than yourself. And that is what will comfort you.
Do you like the night sky?
Do I like what?
To look at the night sky.
The night sky. I love the night sky.
Ever since I was very little, I was always fascinated with the sky, which, by the way, in New York is hard to see. when you look up, all you see are the, tops of the tenements. But just where I grew up, there were tenements. But when I first saw the night sky, outdoors where there's no lights, and suddenly realized, oh, my God, so that's what they're talking about. Suddenly realized, if you lay on your back and you look at the stars at night, you suddenly realize what it feels like to fall into the sky.
Mm. And wherever you are, you can do that, even if there's no wilderness.
Yeah. As long as you got grass to lay on the back. But just stare up.
That's right.
And suddenly realized, huge. And suddenly, you don't, it's not so bad that you feel small. It's not so bad. Because it actually kind of feels good.
Something comforting in it.
Yeah.
That's what Job discovered, actually.
Yeah, but he got his butt kicked, you know. And that was a result of a bet.
I have a great chapter on that in
okay.
my book.
Okay. 139-303-713-8585. The number as we continue with Rabbi Jamie Korngold, God in the Wilderness, Rediscovering the Spirituality of the Great Outdoors. By the way, there's a wonderful picture here, and I'm curious, which canyon?
That's the Grand Canyon.
It is the Grand Canyon. You're down at the bottom here.
It's down at the bottom. That's where the whole Adventure Rabbi program got started.
I mean, you're down, what do they call that? The something schist. The oldest rocks that are visible.
That's right. It's taking a trip through time. The creation of the world when you walk down that canyon.
The foundation of the world, if you will. 303-713-8585, the number 20 minutes away from 2 o'clock in the morning with Rabbi Jamie Korngold, God in the Wilderness, as we take a quick break on News Radio 850 KOA.
Is the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know.
146. So we head the tour of the top of the hour. I'm talking with my guest this hour again with Rabbi Jamie Korngold. 303-713-8585, the number. By the way, we were talking about in the break about Job. We brought it up and said, you know, I always find it fascinating. Fundamentalists say, gambling is evil. I said, well, God did it. Well, I mean, explain that story because that's important.
Well, it's the Job story is there's the beginning part of the story in which God is saying to Satan, you know, hey, have you seen my faithful man down there? And Satan says, well, he's only faithful because you give him everything he wants. Let me take it all away. And I bet he won't be so faithful.
And
so they have a little wager.
And they have a bet.
You're going.
And I got a bet. So there's a bet going on here.
There is a lot of bet. Absolutely.
So next time somebody says, gambling's evil, they say, well, God did it.
Well, one of the things I love about that story, too, is that it shows that, I mean, God isn't totally perfect in the Bible, and I know that's a really controversial thing to say, but even in the very beginning of the story, in the very beginning in Genesis, you know, God's like, well, should I make humanity? Should I not? And the angels are like, I don't think you should. It's going to mess everything up. And God makes man, and what does it do?
Messes everything up. But not only that, but then Lucifer says, why don't we just give him salvation now and get it over with, because otherwise everything's going to be mucked up. And God says, no, free will. And Satan says, you'll be sorry.
And God makes this big flood, destroys everything.
Yeah.
And says, that's going to make
because he was
better,
angry.
But does it?
Yeah, God was pissed.
Doesn't make anything better.
No, it just drowns everyone.
And then God says, oops, whoops, I'm sorry. You know, I should have known. Man is evil anyway.
Yeah,
God makes all these mistakes. God's not perfect.
See?
So why are we trying so hard to be perfect?
And
we should be working so hard.
I like your philosophy a lot. Let's go to the telephone in Canada on a cell phone. It's RB. Hey, RB.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. You're on with
your guest.
Yeah, the Rabbi Korngold.
Hello, Rabbi Korngold.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
I'm phoning from Lloydminster, Alberta. No, sorry, now it's Lloydminster, Saskatchewan.
Ah.
I just crossed the border from one province to another. It's inside a city.
Well,
anyway, a little geographic.
Yeah, a little geography.
I wanted to, there's so many things I want to talk about because I find this just fascinating. The idea of spiritualism versus religion. I've always thought that, like you're saying, when you're in the wilderness and you're more reliant on the spiritual aspects and there's no hierarchy and there's no orthodoxy, that's when you're most free and close to nature is when spiritualism is at its best. But when you build a temple to it, and you start staffing it, like, and then like the Peter principle, pretty soon, you know, it just becomes an edifice unto itself, and they lose their roots. And then you get the exceptionalism creeps in, saying that we have to be right, we're better than you, and warfare results. What do you think about that?
First of all, I just want to say that I was a rabbi in Calgary, which is in your neighborhood.
I used to live in Calgary for a few years.
All right. I was right over there.
I lived in the suburbs, Martin Ridge Way, in one of the small little suburbs up there.
So here's the thing. You know, a lot of people I work with tell me that, oh, rabbi, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And I think they are religious. I think religion has just been claimed. The title has been claimed by, you know, a fundamental group that says this is religion and what you're doing isn't religion. And part of what I'm trying to do in this book is take that back and say, you know what? You can be a religious person and not step foot in a church or a sanctuary, a synagogue. There's a different way to be a religious person. And what you're doing is spiritual, but you know what? It's also religious. That's what
that makes sense. And also the fact that almost every religion, the religions are controlled by a fanatical few at the top. Most of the people who belong to or identify themselves in each religion are right middle of the road, moderate people that could really want to bend over backwards for their fellow man and believe in that message, but are constantly being led astray by leaders who, for their own benefit, you know, whatever, to make money or to keep power, and there's always selfish things that motivate them. And I wonder how we can ever break through that, because it seems every time we start chipping away that edifice, something else comes along to pull it back. There never seems to be a true impasse. And I look at, like, Israel today is almost like the signature defining moment of that, how every time you get closer to peace, more violence erupts.
You know, I have a social networking site as part of my AdventureRabbi.org site, and we have hundreds of people that sign up, and they're good people, you know, and they're coming from a good place. And I think that part of what we need to do is each of us just consciously focus on the people that are not extreme, because there's millions of us that are not extreme, and that's just where we need to focus our attention.
Yes, like Rick always says most people are right in the middle, and that is, but it becomes an extreme position to be in the middle, because you're not allowed to say it, because then you get in such a partisan or polarized world where things are presented to us in black and white, but actually everything's in shades of gray, that people won't speak up, and they'll clam up if they feel pressure on certain things, like, oh, you're not supposed to say that.
I think you make a really good point, and I think that's one of the most important things that my work does, is it creates a forum for people to be in that not extreme place. I mean, I do this retreat for the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, in the fall, and I get hundreds of people that come, and they come from all over the country. We get some from Canada, even. We had someone from England last year. And, you know, they come on these retreats, and the first thing they say is, wow, I had no idea there were so many people just like me. So part of it is just creating a forum where we can network with each other and realize that, you know, you don't have to be extreme to be in the club.
Do you happen to know Michael Lerner, Rabbi Michael Lerner?
I don't know him personally, but I certainly know his work.
He's one of my heroes. In the confusing aspects of what was going on after 9/11, when I was trying to find somebody out there that, you know, made some sense. He really did. And I've been following his work ever since, and I think there's hope for all of us that people like that are in the world.
It's a great choice.
All right, and we must move on, but thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Harvey. And way up there in Canada,
eh?
Yeah, sure. You know, one word I keep seeing that pops up, and I have to like it, because I don't often find the real sense of the word except in the wilderness, and that is the word awe. And I'm so tired of hearing people say awesome, because awesome means something capable of inspiring awe. But in your case, it fits. Fortunately, you don't use the word awesome. Use the word awe.
Awe.
Yeah. And I don't mean awe. I mean awe. Just whoa.
Well, some of our great thinkers say that God begins where words end. That's what Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel said. And we have to get that to that place of awe And for some people, that's through prayer or synagogue. But for some of us, sometimes the words get in the way, and we can reach that place beyond words more easily in on top of a mountain or beneath a tree or just walking through Central Park. We get to that place where there's just it's just nothing to say. It's just so amazing.
All right, we're going to continue and take it to the top in a moment. Rabbi Jamie Korngold, God in the Wilderness, Rediscovering the Spirituality, the Great Outdoors, as we continue with the Adventure Rebbe. That's right. By the way, they'll tell you where the dot-coms are so they can... And you take them out on different what, wilderness experiences?
Hiking, biking, or even, like, I do trips in Central Park. In May, I'm going to be in New York for 4 days, and I take people hiking in Central Park.
Oh.
So... Doesn't even have to be that extreme to make
I know some
work.
Really nice places, too. Anyway, hold on. 303-713-8585, the number. We continue on News Radio 850 KOA. As we head up toward the top of the hour, we have to send it into the Rap City here so we can let the good Rebbe go home, drive all the way back up to Boulder. It's a long drive.
Not too long.
Yeah, it's
not
far. Well, you take the highway, but, you know, it's still a long way. For those who wish to get your book, it's already available on bookshelves and on the dot-coms.
Actually comes out on Tuesday.
Cool.
But you can pre-order it at AdventureRabbi.org. It'll connect you directly to Amazon, and that's how you'll get the best price is by going to AdventureRabbi.org and connecting directly to Amazon through our website.
All right. And of course, people who wish to get involved with one of your adventure, God in the Wilderness's adventures, they can do that?
Yeah, multitude of ways. We have lots of retreats. We have trips. I'll be traveling to New York and Philadelphia coming up in the next month, and in the fall will be my national book tour. So just contact me on the website.
So we got you before the national book tour.
You did?
Cool. Excellent. All right, very good. And Rabbi Jamie Korngold. Jamie, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, and again, it's called God in the Wilderness. And by the way, it makes more sense to me than sitting in a building in a suit. I don't have anything against suits. I mean, I like them, but...
No dress shoes allowed on my events.
Cool. Nothing like a hiking boot, though.
Lots of hiking boots.
Okay, very good. Anyway, news coming up on News Radio 850 KOA.